Benjamin, Ben, Pops, the Lord, Nibby. He was a man of many names. Our father was born in the sky, quite literally. When he was born, listen, of our house, our family home, was treble the size it is today. And he was born in a bedroom in a part of the house that was dismantled when he was a teenager. That part is now a lawn, and Dad loved walking on that lawn and telling people he was born just up there. And they would, of course, be somewhat startled by the concept. He was born on the 17th of September 1938 and baptised in this very church. He was the firstborn child and only son of Bill and Pamela Rathdonnell. They had married a year earlier and were only just settling into Lisnavar at this time. Bill, his father, who was only 24 when Dad was born, had just succeeded his own father, who died young. Dad was barely a week old when the British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain came back from a meeting with Hitler in Munich and declared, "Peace for our time." Well, a year later, the world was at war and Dad's father set off to fight the good fight. By the time Dad was 5 years old, his father was commanding a squadron of tanks and chasing Nazis through Belgium and Schleswig-Holstein. Meanwhile, Dad's mother was in England, in Belfast, working with the Wrens, intercepting signals from German U-boats and decoding Morse codes, the dashes and the dots and all that. So he grew up at Lisnavar for the first 7 years of his life without much sight of either parent. Nonetheless, they managed to create three younger sisters for him. Catherine, dear Pally, Jane, and eventually Rosebud. They were the Nibbies. Pamela, their mother, was home at Lisnavar in time for VE Day, the day Nazi Germany finally surrendered. And one of Dad's earliest memories was of watching his mum light up a huge pile of straw in the cowfield that night as a celebratory bonfire. It was, my father remarked, a perfectly good rick of straw. He was rarely one to promote such wanton destruction. Dad's first schooling involved him walking from Lisnavar to the old rectory, or sometimes he rode a pony, and there he was educated by the Reverend Matchett. His school trips became a little longer when he was dispatched to England at the ripe old age of 7. He started at Aysgarth, a prep school in the depths of North Yorkshire, and having been incarcerated there for 5 years, he spent another 5 years at Charterhouse, a boarding school in Surrey, where my brother William also went. He seems to have enjoyed his school days, from what I could tell, but fundamentally, it gave him his rich love for the sea. Now, when we were kids, my brothers and Sash and I, we developed a game that we would play with Dad. He didn't know about the game, actually, but we used to play it with him anyway. The game was called When I Was in the Navy. And what you do is you start a conversation with Dad about any topic in the whole wide world. Whatever you want, tiddlywinks, Tokyo, traffic cones on the NET1, it didn't matter. And then you set a timer and see how long it takes before Dad says, "When I was in the Navy." And somehow he would brilliantly always segue the conversation. So one moment you'd be talking about traffic cones, and then just like that, you'd find yourself listening to Dad's views on how to lay out sonars on the ocean surface as an anti-submarine maneuver. When I was in the Navy, he never disappointed. But the oceans, the Navy, it was just a huge part of him. I think it started when he began chugging back and forth to go to school across the Irish Sea each term. But his mum, Pamela, was from the Lake District in England, and she and her wonderful sisters, Diana and Golly, used to bring Dad and his sisters out sailing on Lake Windermere, a huge lake in Cumbria, close to where they all lived and had grown up. Pamela, his mother, was really quite a remarkable woman, a fine artist. She loved painting ships and airplanes and mechanical engineering stuff. She was official artist to the RAF at the time of Queen Elizabeth II's coronation in 1953. And as part of that, she brought 14-year-old Dad to the Naval Review at Spithead, which was an incredible spectacle for him. He had 200 Royal Navy battleships lined up for an evening of 21-gun salutes and one of the greatest fireworks displays ever seen up until that time. And Dad was absolutely hooked. He saw those ships and he wanted to be on one. So in 1955, 16-year-old Dad sat his Royal Navy exam in Dartmouth and he failed. In fairness, it was because of his eyesight. He was colourblind, and you can't really be colourblind in the Navy because all the navigation lights and warning signals, communication systems, everything, it's all colour-coded. You need to be able to identify the right colour. This was, I remind you, back in the days of the Cold War when Russia was enemy number one. Do you remember those days? Anyway, the Royal Navy says, sorry son, you can't see colours correctly, and they show him the door. He goes back to school, where he is now head of the school's naval section, and he does all that sailing on lakes and the seas at every opportunity he can get. 1957, he comes back to Dartmouth for another eye examination, and he passes. It turns out he somehow got hold of all the colour blindness charts and memorised all the answers. So you cheated, I said to him when he revealed this deceit to me about a decade ago. Of course I cheated, he retorted hotly. It's called initiative, young man. So, he's now in the Royal Navy, through the door. He's a cadet at the Naval College in Dartmouth, and he spent the next 8.5 years in the Navy. His forte was actually admin and secretarial work, and he was really very good at that. And he ended up being ADC to a top-notch admiral over in what was called the Far East Station. This was absolutely the making of the man, a time of immense excitement for him. As I say, it was the time of the Cold War, and he served on a number of different destroyers and frigates and whatnot. Andrew brilliantly had them sourced all the photographs of a bunch of them and had them framed a few years ago and put on Dad's dressing room wall. HMS Belfast and the Girdle Ness and Ark Royal, an aircraft carrier that could fit something crazy like 5,000 soldiers on board. Anyway, this was the Navy years for him, and he was in all sorts of places: Norway, the North Sea, Gibraltar, Malta, Hong Kong, Singapore, Saigon, a strange skirmish in Brunei that we never really got to the bottom of. We did ask him about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he gleefully replied that he was at that time anchored off the southwest of New Zealand's South Island at that time, which, if you think of a map, that is about as far away as you can be. 7,500 miles. It also took him a long time to confess that he was a veteran of the Second Cod War. Now, you probably haven't heard of the Second Cod War. Indeed, I have a hunch you might be a little rusty about the First Cod War. But there were, in fact, 3 Cod Wars, and Dad, as I say, was a seasoned veteran of the second one. He hated it, actually. The Navy was sent to Iceland to bully the poor old Icelandic fishermen who were fishing for cod in waters that the British government claimed to belong to them. So there was a very strange showdown between the Royal Navy and the good fishermen of Iceland. It wasn't exactly the Battle of Trafalgar, but as far as I can work out, Dad seems to have been rooting for Iceland throughout the whole thing. It was like that sometimes. He didn't always go the direction you might expect. He resigned from the Navy in 1964, 2 weeks after the press announced his engagement to our dear mother, Jessica Butler, as she was, a fine and bonny lass from Venice Bridge, County Kilkenny. They were wed in 1965, 60 years ago this coming October. And Dad's best man, Sir Richard Butler, who's come from Malta to be with us here today, thank you, Richard. After the wedding, my parents settled at Lisnavar. This was, as I say, 6 long decades ago, and Lisnavar had changed radically since Dad was a young fellow. In 1952, as I mentioned, the house was substantially resized, 2/3 of it was taken down. And then his father, the fun-loving 4th Baron Rathdonnell, died at the age of 44. Dad was only 21 and making his way through the Navy at that time. His father's death was a heavy blow to him and his 3 younger sisters, and to his mother, to Pamela, who, as I say, always lively, always enigmatic, a fabulous grandmother, great fun, but probably a little tricky for him. She longed to be the first woman on the moon, for instance. She was married again in 1962 to Major Hugh Massey, who some of you might remember. Point is that Dad was now the 5th Baron at the age of 21, and Lisnavar was basically now his responsibility. He remained in the Navy for 5 more years before resigning to forge a new path. Goodbye, HMS Ark Royal. Hello, HMS Massey Ferguson. I only ever knew him as a farmer. In my childhood, he was forever grappling with the problems of drainage and potholes and sheep dips, whirling around the estates in his Renault 4, known in certain quarters as the Lord's Lamborghini. But he took on the farm and he did what he could to improve it over the years, and like the Renault 4, the whole place kind of seems to be held together by baler twine, but somehow, and maybe memory is kind, somehow the place always seemed spick and span and orderly. He started out cattle farming, loved it, but alas, that all fell apart when brucellosis struck. He then sort of pioneered the concept of indoor lambing, and by the time we were all young fellas, there were 1,000 ewes giving birth to over 1,500 lambs at this Navarre every spring. In the summers, he was forever up in the New Holland combine harvester, harvesting fields of barley and wheat, sometimes clad in his plus fours or wearing one of the crazy hats Sash gave him when she got back from one of her exotic adventures. He installed a windmill at this Navarre, as well as a wood chip boiler and a brilliant wind fan system for drying oats and straw and indeed the wood chips. He was a tremendous tree planter, and I know his grandchildren will forever associate him with tree sleeves. You see them everywhere at this Navarre because he was always planting. Oak, beech, cherries, chestnut, yew, and all those trees growing taller even as I speak. Glorious sanctuaries for all creatures, great and small, and such a marvellous legacy to him. Some of you will know those words from the glory days of the Lisnavar Syndicate, which he ran for several happy decades with the help of dear Andy Verney, his trusty manager for so long. And to those who do recall the syndicate, please know that Dad often continued that tradition of taking his Tuesdays lightly by venturing into Carlo for a pint of warm beer. He was involved in so many other things. Some of you will have known him from this work on, from his work in the Diocesan Council, specifically in this diocese, with this church, this parish, with Disraeli School, Bock, with the Orphan Society, with St. Michael's House in Dublin. Others from the Tullow Show, the Spring Show, the Dublin Horse Show, where he was chief steward of the veterinary paddock, a paddock where my brothers and I all worked under him as volunteer stewards. Coincidentally, Dad had laid on a free bar at the paddock for him. Then there was Lisnavar itself, which he ran with Mum for all those years. Running a big house, no easy thing every day. There's a new hazard, dry rot in the rafters, jackdaws in the chimney, slate sliding off a roof, the sudden emergence of a major fault line in the bedroom ceiling. And Dad spent a large portion of his life sporadically trying to right those daily wrongs, and indeed, that is the daily challenge for my brother William and his wife Emily to this day. I'm sorry this is so long. We're getting there. Things that Dad didn't really like. Well, we would be here for a very long time if I stayed on that theme, but the electric scooter was quite high on his list, oddly enough. And he was never at ease with an orange. Or swimming trunks. Or Google Maps, we went with Pop Map. And as for airports, on the other hand, he loved pink gin and fishing rods and fancy dress parties and smoking jackets. He was always so dapperly dressed, even in his pyjamas. When we were kids, he was never without a trilby or a bowler or a fine peaky cap, and throw in those Dickensian whiskery front burns, and it was all so fabulously furry and formal. He had his quirks too. Whenever he travelled abroad, he would invariably bring two things to read: the Carlo Nationalist and the Diocesan Magazine. Literally, that was it. He should arguably have popped them in the pocket. But what more would you require? Well, a portable drinks cabinet, too, obviously. A beautiful masterpiece that accompanied him and my mother on many a road trip around Ireland. So here we are to bid him farewell on this beautiful spring afternoon. So many lovely faces in the congregation, so many last night, and we have all been absolutely inundated with expressions of condolence. I salute his sister, Catherine Pally, to us, the last of the Nibbies, an inspiration to us all, and her marvellous brood of descendants. I know many of you will recall his other delightful sisters, Jane and Rosebud. And his daughters-in-law, Emily, Nix, Ali, and to you too, Tommy Sykes. He adored you all. When I was a wayward bachelor, Dad gave me some fine advice on marriage. First off, he said, find someone who isn't into horses. Sorry, Bob. He also said, find someone who can laugh with you long after it ceased to be remotely funny. Dad would never have been able to achieve any of the things he did without the support of our mother, his guardian angel, who lived with him for 40 years at Lisnavour, and another 20 at Kinsler's Hill. And it is amazing that they got 60 years together. We're going to call it 60 years. I mean, it might have been half that. 1990 was Dad's first scrap with cancer. And since then, my goodness, he's been the king of the jump scares. So many near misses. Cancer, car crashes, near drowning, septicemia, a splash of E. coli, and whatever you're having yourself. And the fact is that today's event, sad as it is, might have taken place any number of times over the past few decades, especially when we were told he really was a goner 12 years ago. As William said, one more chapter. He was a medical marvel. Warrior-like, he resurrected himself again and again. He was HMS Indomitable. And I think that awareness that Dad was living on borrowed time, it made us all appreciate him so much more. It's what made him and Mum so active. Every time we blinked, they were off on another adventure, the constant outings with the Tree Society, or they would go away to see places and people they loved in other lands, fishing with old pals in the Scottish Highlands, revisiting old haunts in Malta, France, the places where they honeymooned in Spain. Only a couple of years ago, Dad took Mum on a week-long 850-mile tour of Normandy. And we also had our own family outings, which my siblings and I joined our parents for holidays, and each one of those trips was just a little bit magical. But now, at last, the salty old Voyager has upped anchor and set sail to the great beyond. Sunset and evening star, one clear call for me. May there be no moaning of the bar when I put out to sea. He is now out on the eternal seas, or back in the sky from whence he came, at one with the gods and the stars and with the faith he held so dear. Dad was quietly convinced that he was going to be reincarnated as a horse. This may be so, but I know that he is in fact reincarnated in us, his children. And indeed, he is in our children too, his 10 grandchildren, all here today. He has been their tribal elder all their lives, and I see his chief characteristics in them: kindness, gentleness, dignity, humour, diplomacy, practicality, and a growing fondness for portable drinks cabinets. And I also know he is still with us because I can see him quite clearly when I look at the moon. We were so very lucky to have him for as long as we did. His end was peaceful and strong. Mart, I thank you for your role in bringing that peace to him. On our last visit on Friday afternoon, he never opened his eyes, but he could hear us when we spoke. And when we said our final farewell, he raised his arm from the bed in a salutation that was just extraordinarily magnificent. He told his children, that he had enjoyed a wonderful life, a heaven-blessed life. And it was true. He really did. Farewell, dear Pops. On behalf of all your family, who loved you so very, very much, thank you for everything. Sleep well.